It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, 15 minutes late, but we are getting it going this evening. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to, for instance, be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, real-time, multimedia, zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Jump on by, go to HeadOn.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and, well, when you arrive in the room, you'll be greeted by the likes of, and they promise me they will all greet you. Heather and Laurel and Mr. Bill and Otto and Rally and Terry in Saigon this evening. And the Urban Prospector and V.T. Blom and Warrior Witch are all there waiting for you should you decide to jump in and participate. And you will, of course, be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I just came roaring through the door. Well, I wasn't roaring. No. I was supposed to be picked up to go and pick up the rental for the great Atlanta sojourn, and, well, I just now got back. So there's a glorious Chevy Malibu that's going to be making the trip. Kind of hoping for a Nissan Altima or something like that, but no. Actually, I was hoping for something all-wheel drive, but it was the last car in the fleet, and I got it. So starting early in the morning, we're going to head south. Haven't decided which route yet. I'll check with the map in the morning, and either go via Charlotte, via Knoxville, or via Asheville. Those are the choices. I'm inclined to go via Asheville just to avoid both Charlotte traffic and Knoxville traffic, both being cities where the general population passing through seems to be, just call it the NASCAR effect. Everybody's having their NASCAR moment, and maybe it's not so bad going cutting off the both of them and going through Asheville. But anyway, heading down to Atlanta. The Atlanta area, I'm looking forward to it. Today has been about turkeys. You know, the day before yesterday was about pork butts. Today is about turkeys. Mm-hmm. And smoking today was a considerably different experience than a couple of days ago. Because it was... It was every bit of 20 degrees when I plunged my bare hand into the almost frozen mass of brine in which the turkeys were being long-term baptized. Yes. And Turkey 1 went on this afternoon at about 1 o'clock. Turkey 2 went on about an hour ago. The acorn cooker will accommodate only one turkey at a time. Propped up, of course, on the only beer can that will support a 15-pound turkey, namely Fastas. It's Australian for the only beer can big enough to prop up a 15-pound tacky. Right. So, wait, don't tell me that. Steve from Georgia standing in the chat room saying, man, it's been batshit crazy cold here. You mean I'm not even going to get a break going south? Ack. Ah, just the same. It's going to be a wonderful time, a wonderful, wonderful time, and I'm looking forward to it. Hey, we've got thanks to send out this evening. The last thank you, the last subscriber thank you of the evening, or of the month, really, because there are no subscribers on the 29th or the 30th. So we send out thanks to our buddy Harold, president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold. And thanks go out as well to our buddy Philip. Thank you, Philip, for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks as well go out to our buddy Randy in PA. Thank you, Randy, so very much. Thank you to Sharon. We do appreciate it, Sharon. Thank you to Angel. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Charlene in Rogue Island, and thanks to Smitty in Florida. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, like I said, a lot of cooking going on. You know, you can't. This was all for the big, the big barbecue shindig. But of course, the little old blue haired ladies and the little old blue haired men don't let you off the hook. Oh no, not at all. Nope. Let's see. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Maybe hold off on the phone calls for just a little bit here. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Praising his holy name on both streams, glory and hallelujah. Because, of course, this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And the little old blue-haired ladies didn't take too kindly to me doing all that barbecue for the road trip, so I got set to work out back of the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall kitchen, too. And a big barbecue feast, big pulled pork feast in the Fellowship Hall this evening. Yeah. The banana pudding worked this time. I had the right stuff. And there was pulled pork and hot yellow slaw. Yes, indeed. Some good pickle slices. Toasty bread to make sandwiches with. There was some macaroni salad and some potato salad and some baked beans. And like I said, the banana pudding. And the deacons just didn't care. But the deacons didn't care because they knew that they got to... they got to take the night off tonight because we met our fundraising goal. And thanks again so much to Steve from New York and to Ralphs and the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge. Thank you very much. So the deacons don't have any plates to pass this evening. So we don't have to worry about an offertory hymn. We don't have to worry about anybody getting closed head injuries from those big, heavy brass plates with the burgundy velvet liners in them. Nope, nothing to worry about at all. And with that in mind, we can jump straight to the Bible study here. Oh yes. And look, there's other stuff to go into this evening, and we'll find a way. But it's not every day that you get a brilliant exposition of climate change, or what ain't going to be climate change, or the climate change you didn't think you were going to get. But the report on climate change came out this week from the federal government, a multi-agency climate change report, to which Julius Geezer responded, "I don't believe it. I don't believe it." As if science was something that that would just go away if you didn't believe in it. Of course, maybe it's good that science isn't a religion, because when you didn't believe, the thing about religions is when you believe or don't, when you don't believe in them, the people who do believe in them tend to get all uppity and start hollering things like "Great Christ Almighty" or "Aloha Snack Bar" or what. And the next thing you know, you got heads getting lopped off all over the place. And witches being burnt and whatnot. But Julius Geezer doesn't believe that climate change is going to devastate the United States and the rest of the world, even though climate change is already devastating the United States and the rest of the world. He's not going to believe his lying eyes and his lying ears. No. Not at all. Now, maybe he would acknowledge climate change if, say, you know, some giant monumental hellbender of a hurricane completely blew away his tacky-ass pile of bricks down there in Florida. But on the other hand, he'd just see that as an opportunity to bilk the insurance companies, because that's the kind of guy he is. But no, I saw this clip, and it's like, yeah, this is going right to the top of prayer meeting Wednesday. Oh, yes. And for it, we go to Rick Wiles, who is all obsessed with the end times. Although, to be fair, Rick Wiles has never made it clear whether or not he plans to rapture naked or rapture fully clothed. And so we'll never really know, we don't know so far, whether he is a heretic or not. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Scott in San Diego said, Burr, 20 degrees, that'll chill your giblets. That'll chill your giblets. That's not particularly easy to say, and it did. And by the way, I finally gave up. Earlier today, it was all of 40 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. But I gave up, and we're burning propane in here now. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Tom out in the Bay Area. And out in the larger portion of the house, we're burning kerosene. I finally broke down. I was hoping to make it to December 1st, but it just didn't happen. But we're up to a toasty and bearable 55 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And right now, the great big humongous Kincaid Mansion kidney-shaped swimming pool, well, it's a skating rink because we didn't get around to draining it. It'll probably be ruined by spring, but oh well, you'll have that. But anyway, back to Rick Wiles. You only thought you knew what climate change was going to do. Uh-huh. Yeah. Get the hockey puck.
We believe that China is well aware of the Ice Age, and that's why they're developing an artificial sun, they're developing artificial moons. And people here in the USA, you can laugh, mock, ridicule all you want.
And believe me, I plan to. We're only 13 minutes into a 2 minute and 12 second, 13 seconds into a 2 minute and 12 second clip. And I'm going to laugh and mock and ridicule a lot. Here, let's get started. I mock you, Rick Wiles. I ridicule you as a hustler and a grifter and a liar, and the truth ain't in you. Really? China's building artificial suns. I think you may have misread the headline. Maybe it's based on that story about the one Chinese geneticist who claims to have edited the genetics of the first human child. China's creating artificial S-O-N-S instead of S-U-N-S. Artificial suns, right, yeah. Well, you know, you let them get away with building a couple of artificial islands, and the next thing you know, they're out there building artificial stars. Yep, right.
But you're going to end up freezing to death, all right? Because this thing is here. It's arriving.
Klaatu Barada Nikto? This thing is here. It's arriving. So just to be clear here, not only does Rick Wiles deny the actual science of climate change, he says it's going in the other direction and we're all going to freeze to death in the dark. I wish he would quit listening to the coal industry propaganda, because they've been preaching that for years. You don't want to burn coal, boy? Well, that's all right. You can just freeze to death in the dark. Uh-huh. I'm completely ignoring the entire history of human evolution and human social progress, in which for about 99.9% of our evolutionary history, we've not had electricity and not had coal-fired anything, and somehow managed to not freeze to death in the dark. Yeah, you're going to freeze, says Rick Wiles.
And it's arriving quickly, and it's arriving this year. We're going to see the onset of this ice age in the winter of 2018, 2019. But
Isn't it convenient that this prophet, bullshit, isn't it interesting that he makes his ice age prediction as the northern hemisphere is moving into the dead of winter? Of course, he forgets about the southern hemisphere. I had an interesting note from our buddy Robert in Australia yesterday. He said, I wasn't tuned into the program because, well, we didn't have electricity most of it. Well, see, they're already freezing to death in the dark in the southern hemisphere, right? No. Because, see, the southern hemisphere is coming up on, yes, well, the, first day of summer. It's about, what, 23 days away or so. And Sydney got the living bejesus blasted out of it. Huge lightning storms, wind storms, massive rains, flooding in the rail stations. And it does not. There were no, at least not what I could see reading what Robert sent along. There were no icebergs. How about that? Yeah, sadly lacking in icebergs. But don't tell Rick Wiles that, you know, there's a southern hemisphere because we're all going to freeze to death in the dark.
It's really going to kick in next winter. That's going to be when you're going to have...
By the way, we get a graphic there. Inside the fusion reactor of China's artificial sun. Oh, these people would be so much easier to deal with if they had even the most rudimentary understanding of science. And I say that having only the most rudimentary understanding of science. China is allegedly working on a fusion reactor. We're working on a fusion reactor, too. Fusion reactors are, well, kind of the holy grail of nuclear energy because, as opposed to fission, where you start with something really nasty, like, say, plutonium or U-238 or something like that, which is really dangerous, and it degrades into something that's still really dangerous. Well, with fusion, you start with the simplest of atoms, helium, hydrogen, that kind of thing, and it's almost the reverse, and it's the process that runs the furnace, if you will, that is our sun, S-U-N, not S-O-N, and there's no gene splicing involved.
I have a lot more believers. Some people said, well, why would God do this to us? Why would God allow it to happen?
Wait, why would God allow this to happen? Let me get out the tattered old purple robe with the fraying appliqued moons and stars and Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark Baby written across it in glow-in-the-dark paint. Let me consult my busted old magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy, ask again later. Why would God plunge the world into another ice age that exists only in the imagination of Rick Wiles? I got it. Abortion.
Well, God isn't allowing it to happen. All these things are happening as a result of man's sin. That man's
What sort of sin would that there be? There, second banana, Bubba.
Sin, because we're connected with the earth. That sin is causing this disruption in the earth.
Okay, let's see. So that would be your ecological sin there, like burning coal. Oh no, coal makes plant. No, but the planet can't be getting warmer. But destroying God's, you know, because God, destroying God's creation in the search for hydrocarbons and That would include your coal, your frack gas that poisons all manner of potable water. And, of course, the old standby oil. That could screw up a planet pretty good. Makes sense to me. But, of course, I don't think that's what Second Banana here is talking about.
The Earth was never meant to deal with sin. The Earth was made perfect. The Lord made it.
The Lord made it. He made it perfect. Those sinful volcanoes and those sin-laden earthquakes and those dirty, filthy, sinful tsunamis. The Earth is perfect. Yeah, I guess this is the intelligent design argument. They've moved on from the human species to the whole damn planet because the intelligent design of the human species didn't work out real well, and all you have to do is go, appendixes. Cancer. Wisdom teeth. And there goes intelligent design because the simple fact of the human appendix is enough to make you realize that whoever the intelligent designer... Well, the intelligent designer thinks they're intelligent the way that Donald Trump thinks he has a very good brain. In other words, not so much. The intelligent designer's a dumbass. Oh, but the Earth is perfect. Go on, Second Banana.
Remember, the Holy Spirit brooded over the waters, so he formed this earth. He made this earth for us, for habitation for us. It was our sin that cascaded this whole problem that we see in the world around us.
Bullshit, 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 bullshit. I happen to know that there was no Holy Spirit brooding over the waters. No. There was a turtle. And there was an elephant standing on the turtle. And the world is sitting on the back of the elephant. And the elephant's standing on the turtle. And yes, heretic, you say, well, what's the turtle standing on then? You're so smart. Well, I happen to know, because it is revealed wisdom, that it's turtles all the way down. The turtle's standing on the turtle. And that turtle's standing on a turtle. Or perhaps humanity is here because of the efforts of the hero twins. Or perhaps, maybe, the Earth was created by some deity that sounds like someone whose name sounds like someone sneezing. These Johnny-come-lately Christians don't know nothing.
And so when you see these things happening, it was the result of man's sin, not God's wrath. God will use it.
Yes, because
God loves us all, and he loves us so much he's created an eternal lake of fire to burn us all to little tiny crispy sin chicharrones for all eternity because he loves us so much.
It will freeze out Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
Told you there'd be some abortion in there somewhere, didn't I? I rule.
There won't be very many abortions in America 15, 20 years from now.
Really? Just 15 or 20 years from now? Them's going to... You know what? Those are going to be some high-speed ice, high-speed glaciers. And they're going to have to form up where all the glaciers have already fucking melted. Woo!
There's not going to be a lot of pornography consumption.
Consumption? I've never been so transported by a Playboy centerfold that I began to actually chew the pages. I don't know, as long as nobody's getting hurt, now, it's not for me to pass judgment on it, but... No. Pornography consumption. you know, any 12-year-old can tell you that pornography is neither created nor destroyed. It's just like the law of conservation of mass and energy. Now, the pages may occasionally get stuck together, but it ain't consumed.
There's not going to be a lot of drug use. I mean, it's going to freeze out a lot of sin.
Yes.
That's for sure, because people, a lot of people are going to be dead.
Praise his holy name, I tell you. A lot of people are going to be dead. And I guess those dead people will be going to hell. So when the Ice Age comes, how's that going to affect? Because I don't think Jesus is going to want to come down in his holy rolls. Because, you know, he was a Palestinian to begin with and wasn't exactly accustomed to, say, Ice Age Arctic temperatures. Hey, Dad, can I at least get a Patagonia puffy coat before I go? No, you're my son. A lot of people are going to be dead.
That's just a fact. An ice age wipes out a substantial portion of the population.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting, though, is during the last ice age, population went up, not down. Apparently, there's something about a whole bunch of, you know, a 2-mile-high wall of ice out in the out in the front yard that makes people just want to stay in and curl up in those bearskin robes. And, you know, 9 months later, the ice wall's still there. But lo and behold, there's something. Right. No, and I'm not talking about the cat. I'm so glad I saved that for prayer meeting Wednesday. Just so glad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that hissing, sputtering noise is the propane cylinder running out. Don't worry about it. But you know, if you're going to have an ice age, you're going to have to. It's going to have to snow. I mean, it's not like we're just going to go toddling off of our axis and out of our elliptical and somewhat helical, in the grand scheme of things, orbit. And no. There's going to have to be some clouds and there's going to have to be some snow. But let me point out something here. According to a brand new report, probably by Sinners. We are to understand that climate change is already wreaking havoc, and not in the form of glaciers or ice ages. We have deadlier heat in places that weren't supposed to be getting that hot. We have diseases that spread much more easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Lancet, the premier medical journal of the UK, published the report. It comes from 24 academic institutions and United Nations agencies, and it tends to agree with the assessment that came out last week here in the United States, saying that there's a big screw-in a-coming, and yet somehow or another they managed to make that prediction without referencing a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky smiting anybody. Mm-hmm. Odd, that, isn't it? But like I said, you can't have a new ice age without a bunch of clouds dumping a bunch of snow. And see, we got like an inch and a half, 2 inches of snow last night. But miraculously, the Acorn smoker was left unscathed by the snow. I don't know why. It might be a barbecue miracle. But don't anybody tell Lance Wall now. Because he says we're going to have a bunch of prayers raining down on Donald Dipshit Trump. And those prayers were piled up because that Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard that used to live in our White House rejected those prayers. Yes.
What happens if people are praying for a president, praying for a ruler, praying for a nation, and the people of God, for one reason or another, don't get in unity in supporting the right leadership showing up? Suppose leadership shows up that is resistant to God's spirit and resistant to God's agenda. What happens to the cloud? Well, I would suggest to you...
I don't think he understands what we mean in modern parlance by cloud. And I'm not talking about the meteorological thing. He thinks there's some sort of data cloud of prayers. You know, if I knew where Lance Wall now lived, I'd camp out outside his house and wait until he walked out in the morning, and I'd say, hey, bub, God wants you to trade me that Cadillac Escalade you're driving around in for this here handful of magic beans. Give me the keys. And, well, anybody who believes in clouds of prayer, it would.
That the prayers aren't all lost, that they hover. And they hover and they wait until the right time, and then when the right alignment takes place, kaboom, many times.
Why does that sound like something that happens in a public restroom that begins with hovering? And then kaboom when the time is right.
It's the cumulus cloud of the latter rain, I believe many times.
Oh, so it's not a nimbus and it's not a cirrus, it's the cumulus cloud of, yes.
Is the outpouring of God's Spirit in response to the perfect conditions to answer the cry of previous generations of intercession. So those that pray and never see the longed-for manifestation, their prayers are not wasted. Their labor is not in vain. In fact, it takes a great deal of faith. It takes a great deal of character.
And a great deal of, you know, oopid stay.
To persevere, especially nowadays, in the direction of something out of obedience without having immediate reward. Very few people can delay gratification.
I wonder if he knows that on a personal level, delaying that gratification. Yeah.
But what I said was that I believe that the peculiar grace with which Donald Trump... And
by God, it is peculiar if there's any grace at all. It's real peculiar. Maybe it's peculiar the way that some people peculiarly, allegedly thought he looked like Elvis, and it don't get much more peculiar than that.
In spite of protests, in spite of riots, in spite of opposition, in spite of the conspiring elements of legislators and media and saboteurs and betrayal and the left.
Damn it, Lance, buddy, you're off your game. You haven't said George Soros yet.
And on the right, in spite of that, he was able to neutralize the threat of North Korea, undo the power of ISIS, reverse the American decline economically.
Okay, let's just deal with those three. Neutralize the threat of North Korea. There's no agreement with North Korea. And North Korea hasn't neutralized squat. In fact, they're going forward on, 23 new sites? Undo the power of ISIS. Oh, mighty ISIS. No, that pretty much didn't happen either. That was well underway under Obama. And reverse the American decline economically. Well, now, Lance. See what I did there? Don't try this at home. You might want to take that up with 14,000 GM workers who are about to be out of a job there because of the tariffs and the trade war that your God Emperor there, Donald J. Dipshit, started with China. So, but wait. We know what really made him happy.
And move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Okay.
As long as we did that.
Just 4 out of 10 major accomplishments that he did, not counting unemployment turnarounds, etc. He did all that, I believe, because the prayers of God's people that were stored up for years earlier that were not answered in the manifestation of the decision-making that President Obama did.
Well, no, there weren't any good prayers stored up from President Obama, because last I checked, people like Lance Wallnau spent the 8 years of the Obama administration praying for God to kill him and make his wife a widow and his children orphans. I think that's the way the imprecatory prayer went, didn't it? We talked about it to some extent here on this program. Those good, fine, loving Christians full of the grace of the Prince of Peace. You know, they spent 8 years praying for their big, great, big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky to kill that one in our White House.
Certainly not in his last brutal act of betrayal against Israel, when he literally did not allow the United States to resist a vote against Israel's territorial integrity. And he did that during Hanukkah, in his last spiteful act before leaving office.
Jesus Christ.
This man did not make choices regarding America's interest economically, or America's interest in terms of its role in maintaining its sovereignty as a nation state, or in trade, or in any of those areas. And
you know, if this fucker cared as much about the United States as he does Israel, he might be able to do a little bit of good somewhere. Nah, he couldn't. He doesn't do any good at all. He's a waste of air and about $3.67 worth of chemicals, and mostly water. Yeah, I mean, he's so fanboy fetishized over Israel. One wonders why he doesn't choose to live there. Oh, wait, that they're a theocracy. They wouldn't take too kindly to his Christianity now, would they? I mean, nobody wants a Christian evangelist walking around on those all-male buses, or those buses where the women have to sit in the back and talking on. Do you have a moment to talk about Christ's plan for your life? Hey, bub, why don't you go tell it to the Sentinelese? They're just itching to hear from you. Yeah, I'm still really ashamed of the fact that I'm still giggling about that whole thing there, you know, with the Sentinel Island. And Jesus loves you. I mean, they put an arrow through the dude's Bible, the Oral Roberts University graduate. And he still didn't get the hint. Wait a minute, Jesus, you let him put an arrow through the Bible? Are you sure this is my mission, Jesus? Oh, yeah, it's definitely your mission. Hey, get paddling, son. Oh, what a bunch of dicks. Cloud of prayers. And there's another cloud of prayers piece where Lance Wallnau has a big old dry erase board, and he's drawing stuff and everything. So it's got to be true. But from ice ages to clouds of prayer to, well, nobody can really touch helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippistan. You know, Tupelo, where Elvis was born. And, you know, I don't want to break Julius Geezer's heart, but frankly, when it comes to hair and Tupelo and Elvis, I think Brian Fisher looks a lot more like Elvis, you know, if Elvis was like 99. But this is the one. Let me check a couple of emails real quick. Ron and Raleigh. So you're saying, Bob, do you mean to tell me that all those imprecatory prayers against Barack Obama are still hovering around in the cloud? Well, apparently so. And then, you know, kaboom. Boy, it'd be terrible if a torpedo in the water, they'd turn out and turn around and go towards somebody. Well, yeah. That's right, Lee. Lee in New York pointing out, it's obvious, Bob. The smoker remained snow-free due to smoker warming. Well, there you go. There you go being scientific again. I wanted it to be a miracle. Killjoy. Earther says, quit it, Bob. Don't make light of it. Every year there are 9 quintillion babies that are murdered in the womb. That's one with 18 zeros. And that's in this country alone. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, notes, hey, Bob, does this mean all I have to do is not believe Trump was ever president and that would make it so? Make it so, number one. I'm asking for a nation, Jeff says. Well, you know, you could always try it and see how it works out for you. Yeah, Ron said a little bit ago, what we need is some dilithium crystals. That would solve our energy problems. Lickety-split. Obligatory Star Trek reference at 3 minutes before 7 p.m. in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. By the way, this is the 50th anniversary. Tracy informed me earlier today. This is the 50th anniversary of American television's first interracial kiss, when Kirk and Uhura had to be forced by some greater space power to do the Vulcan lip meld. And that was 50 years ago today on Star Trek over on NBC. That's two obligatory Star Trek references. Yes. In regard to the pin-cushioned missionary, Scott in San Diego says he didn't get the hint. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, you guys are good. Scott says he didn't get the hint, but he sure got the point. Oh, that gets a second cowbell. That's just... Stupid fucker. He didn't get the hint, but he sure got the point. Oh, that's brilliant. But now back to helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher. Explaining, boys and girls, what happened to the dinosaurs. Oh, hockey puck warning, hockey puck warning.
I have no hesitation saying this because I do not doubt the word of God. We have no.
And also because you're an idiot, but never mind.
I have no hesitation in affirming that man coexisted with dinosaurs.
You know, I have no problem affirming that, well, maybe for Brian Fisher, that might be true. And he probably had, the elf on the shelf is probably real to him. And so are hobbits and leprechauns and unicorns and hillbillies.
Now, people will tell me I'm a Neanderthal, I'm a Cro-Magnon.
No, Brian, we would not tell you that because we would never insult the Neanderthals and the Cro-Magnons. No, you're just, let's see, what's the technical term for it? Yeah.
You dick!
That's right.
This is superstition, it's old wives' tale, I don't care because my...
I've heard a lot of Appalachian old wives' tales, and one of them was never, the dinosaurs and men lived, and the humans lived together in peace. I wonder if anybody's told Ken Ham down at the Ark Experience that Brian Fisher is working his corner. Ken might not take too kindly to that, being as how the Ark Experience is very near to going belly up.
trust and confidence is in the Word of God. So that Word of God indicates that we walked the earth with dinosaurs. Well, where are they? How come they didn't survive? Well, I think what the...
You know what that pink stuff is between the dinosaurs' toenails? Slow humans.
The scientists are saying about the rhino is probably the explanation. Remember that when the flood came, you had little tiny dinosaurs on the ark.
Just little bitty ones, teeny tiny little dinosaurs. And, you know, I knew they were only going to have to ride it out for a little while. And you know, it's kind of like an iguana. If you keep an iguana in a small space, but if you put the bigger the tank, the more the iguana grows, and next thing you know, dinosaur.
A reason why they couldn't have come on the ark. You got a couple of young male and female rhinos and a couple of, you know, young female and male Tyrannosaurus rexes. So
sure. Man, that has got to be some kick acid. I'd just love to be there when it really, really kicks in and he starts seeing them.
They're tiny. They can be on the ark. And so why didn't they survive? Why didn't they survive after the flood was over? Well, what I'm suggesting is that when the flood happened, remember, it just wiped everything out.
Right.
It just destroyed. It swept across the planet,
mm-hmm.
and it destroyed vegetation. It knocked down trees. It wiped out grasslands. It wiped out vegetation. All of that was just wiped out by these floodwaters.
So the little tiny tyrannosaurs couldn't eat little tiny fish?
And so when these giant dinosaurs, who were what? They were vegetarians. They were herbivores.
Mm-hmm. Vegan tyrannosaurs. Got those great big flesh-tearing claws and those great big flesh-ripping teeth and that aren't worth a damn for chewing leaves. You want something that's more grindy than shreddy. Yeah.
We know from looking at their teeth that they ate plants.
Really now? I know their money spends perfectly well, but if it just whoever the liquor store owner is that's going ahead and selling the hooch to Ken Ham and Brian Fisher when they come stumbling into the, stop it. It's not funny. What's that, Glenn? Wow, says Glenn. You can't get that high on marijuana. I've tried. I know. Eventually, you just kind of... But then again, it was a Saturday or so back, not this past, but maybe the one before, was Bicycle Day. Bicycle Day being the anniversary of the day that that Hoffman discovered the properties of lysergic acid diethylamide. And he gave himself, like, the equivalent of 367 hits or something like that, and managed to come back, which is no small feat in its own right. But at one point in time, he thought he was in Switzerland, and he thought he was pedaling his bicycle against a brick wall for the longest time, and it turned out he was just kind of standing there, and then he got to where he lived, and the houses were melting and shit like that. Maybe at the 367 dose level, Glenn. But no, you're right. You can't get that high on marijuana, no. You get real hungry, though. Hungry like a tyrannosaur. Like a tyrannosaur who's just really... That's it! That's where the dinosaurs went. By God, it was the romaine lettuce, and they all died of E. coli poisoning. Son of a gun! See, that's the process. That you take a piece of information, and you work with it. Oh, if only I was doing this on the right-wing side, I would have a Gulfstream 5. My friends, we've recently discovered that the deep state deliberately poisoned the romaine, and they did it because they figured out that that's what killed the dinosaurs, and they're trying to have the big die-off here. That's right. By the way, can I interest you in ordering some of my famous paleo chocolate chicken bone malt beverage. Mmm, not tasty.
Now, the Tyrannosaurus was obviously a carnivore with the kind of teeth it had. But what's it going to eat? It has to eat herbivores, right? What else is there to eat? He's got to eat animals that survive on Earth. Well, if all of...
Well, he just said the damn dinosaurs were vegetarians. Hold on a minute. Can't have it both ways there, Brian, old boy.
If the vegetation is wiped out, you know, what are the brachiosauruses? What are they going to eat? So they die out. They just literally starve to death. And the tyrannosauruses don't have anything to eat, so they starve to death. It's not rocket surgery, ladies and gentlemen.
No, no, he did not. Yes, he did. He said it's not rocket surgery. I live for prayer meeting Wednesday. I do. Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport says, I guess the brontosauruses would be sticking their heads out of the top like Dino out of Fred Flintstone's car. By the way, was Fred Flintstone in the Bible? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then did the Lord God Almighty speak unto Fred Flintstone and say unto him, Fred Flintstone, pedal thou thy rock-wheeled automobile as fast as thou mayest, for yea, verily, thou must get unto the ark. But Fred did not get unto the ark, for he did not pedal as fast as he might, and he did therefore drown, for he was a sinner. Amen. Okay, that could work. Yep, David in South Carolina may have the answer. Brian's drinking the stump hole shroom brew. You'll forgive me, David, if I say that sounds an awful lot like a hipster craft beer. And if it isn't, it probably will be. Ron in Raleigh wants to know, hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. If everything was wiped out, what did Noah and his family eat after the flood subsided? Man, people actually believe this horse shit. Religion makes you stupid. Some of them it makes rich, but they stay stupid. Yeah, I know. But, realistically, the saddest thing out of all of this is they think that Noah story in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Holy Book, is a standalone. They think that they think that those ancient peoples came up with that by themselves. When in fact we know, we don't suspect, we know the clay tablets written in cuneiform, which predates the living shit out of the Hebrew alphabet. Has the same story, a great flood. Most of Genesis is just plagiarism. Oh, no, I got this new revelation from God. It sure does sound like what we heard back when we lived in Ur of the Chaldees there, bub. Shut up. I'm on a roll. And then in regard to acid, Glenn says, it's like you put the key in the door of your brain and unlock it. Then all the shit falls out, and you spend the next 24 hours trying to put all your shit back in. Sometimes you don't get all the shit back in. You get guys like that. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Scott says, in produce news, Trump's big announcement... We're going to shut down. There's going to be a complete shutdown of Romania until we know what the hell is going on with their lettuce. Well played, Scott. Well played. Oh, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't. Meanwhile, the American Pastors Network is all upset that some Muslim women done got elected to Congress. We want people in office who think like God thinks. Never for a moment noticing that the word for God in Arabic is Allah. Right. And meanwhile, this clown His name is Sam Rohrer, said, Islamic ideology is absolutely opposed to constitutional rule of law, and the understanding of God and moral truth is incorporated within our Ten Commandments. Never mind the fact that Islam notes that Moses, who allegedly brought the Ten Commandments down from, you know, Sinai, well, they incorporate the Ten Commandments by reference. And they think, and they say that Moses was a prophet. Yeah, really.
Yeah, but they don't understand. They don't. They're opposed to the Ten Commandments. That's why Moses is a prophet in the Quran. There is not enough bad tequila. Not by a long shot. Yeah, we in New York. Subject line, dinosaurs. The kind and merciful God decided to destroy the life from all the lands, and after saving all the species and living for a year and more on the ark, God left some of those species to starve to death. Well, they outlived all the other dinosaurs by a year. Probably, that's probably why they're named the horrible lizard. The unicorns, meanwhile, drowned because they missed the boat. There were rats and bats and elephants, and sure as you're born, the only thing there weren't were the unicorn. No more singing. I promise. Yeah. Now, it has been, it's been a minute, as the current jargon goes. It's been a minute since the Tree of Life massacre. Horror that it was and remains. So I've been paying attention for some big time breaking news because of something that a gospel sharp by the name of Hank Kuhneman said. He runs a grift called One Voice Ministries in Omaha, Nebraska. And he said that, well, there's going to be some good things come out of that Tree of Life synagogue massacre. Now, it takes a special kind of evil to, what's that, Arnold? Arnold says, I feel the stupid, Bob. This pains me greatly. My wife points out that the dinosaurs on the ark would have eaten everything else. Well, no, they were just little bitty, tiny tyrannosaurs. Did you miss that part, Arnold? He said that, Arnold. He said that. Tiny little tyrannosaurs. So, back to Hank Kuhneman. And it takes a special degree of psychotic evil to say that God allowed 11 elderly Jews to be slaughtered at their place of worship, so that he could, you know, the all-powerful creator of the universe, could then be empowered to do something nice.
Laugh if you may, mock if you may, but God says you cannot and will not stop me. Therefore, listen, at the place of Pittsburgh, the Tree of Life, look closely, there's something of life that's going to come now.
I think we can just leave his pornographic fantasies out of this, but I do have to point out that the house band drummer's been doing a pretty good job there. Look to the place of Pittsburgh. Yeah, where are you going? Where are you going this week, Hank? Well, I'm going to the place of Pittsburgh, Bob. How about you? Well, I'm going to the place of Atlanta.
At the place of Pittsburgh. The Tree of Life. Look closely. There's something of life that's going to come now. For their blood speaks. God says there has been a signing into law.
Oh, their blood is speaking. Yeah. Well, if you were a hale and healthy member of the Tree of Life family, and it was one of your beloveds who were slaughtered that horrible, horrible day in Pittsburgh,
Wouldn't you want to get on the road and just go and beat the living fuck out of Hank Kuhneman for suggesting that God and not a man with an AR-15 killed your family member? Wouldn't you? Just wouldn't you? Because I kind of feel that way, and it's just because I'm a member of the human family. You know?
Those who've been afflicted that can find no cure, no help. That medical cures that are out there that exist, but they've been stopped through bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy? I think he was about to say they've been stopped by Barack Obama, but that's just me.
They've been stopped through politics. They've been stopped through legislation. The Spirit of God says, my compassion now. You'll see it this week in your midterm elections, and you're going to see it as you turn into a new year.
So, right, this is pre-election. I'm just let's be clear about that. But I got to say, while I'm by no means an aficionado, as far as your freestyle hip hop goes, this guy really sucks. I'm sorry, Alexander. Alexander says, Jesus Christ, help me. Something is seriously wrong with these religious white evangelicals. There's something wrong with them, all right. Because they're criminals. They're criminals who have the cover of the First Amendment behind which they can perpetrate their crimes. Ain't it charming? Isn't it interesting that all those constitutional originalists up there on the Supreme Court never get all originalist about the First Amendment when it comes to people like these evangelicals using modern technology, modern broadcast means, using the internet, raking in bajillions of dollars. Isn't it interesting that those originalists never look at the evangelicals and say, "Hey, bub, ain't nothing in the Constitution about protecting your right to run your grift over"? The framers never imagined the internet, now did they? No, doesn't happen. I know. Wait a minute, courtesy of Lee. Stop telling us how good the drummer is when the main act is so bad, Bob. You know, we really ought to... Somebody should, like, do a crawl through the archives, and we should publish a tome of Stop Telling Us Bob. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Oh, what's this? Randy in PA says, I had a doctor proudly say to me that God is unknowable. Until I asked him, then how do you know how to please him? He didn't have an answer to that. God could be the devil, and nobody would know. Funny how the dogma prevented his highly educated mind from asking that obvious question. Well, it's powerful, that opiate of the masses. Oh, yeah. How do you know how to please him? He's so unknowable. Yeah, it all falls apart real easy, doesn't it? Well, you gotta have faith that you're pleasing something. Shut up and write my prescription.
My compassion shall outweigh your politics. My compassion shall outweigh your medical. And I will cause it to rain upon the just and the unjust. Why do I speak this? Because God says, from those who died at the play of tree, at the place of tree of life, I will cause this president to join hands with the president, as he already has, of Israel.
Who?
What is he, the prime minister? What is he?
Oh, well, okay. Apparently the transmission from God got garbled a little there. He means Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Psychopath Netanyahu.
Huh? What is he? Prime Minister Netanyahu. They've already joined hands, but now they're going to join hands because in Israel, they're...
Wait a minute. I thought Donald Trump was in love with Kim Jong-un. How's Kim Jong-un going to feel about all this this hand-holding with Bibi? Yeah, there you go. Our buddy John Bridevo says, immaculate birth, big flood, kill the good guy, the basis of all religion. Just about every damn one of them, including the hero twins in the Popol Vuh of the Mayan. And then there's the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And we haven't even gotten to the Indian subcontinent yet. Or talked about Zoroaster. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Yes, he said it's not rocket surgery, Brian Fisher did. And no, he didn't say it ironically, like Bob does. Rocket surgery. Yeah, Arthur pointing out. It's not rocket surrogacy. I love coming to Brian for the cutting-edge scientific discoveries, just like I go to the panhandler on the corner for the best medical counseling. And all God's children said amen. So now that we've got the whole business of the hand-holding set out, well, and the business of what exactly Bibi Netanyahu is he president, is he prime minister, whatever, what?
Came a healing bomb.
A bomb? A bomb? I think we covered this in Life of Brian, didn't we? A bomb!
Already joined hands, but now they're going to join hands because in Israel, there came a healing bomb. Already once. God says there's medical cures and scientific discoveries that are in Israel, and now they will join hands with the United States of America. And God says, watch as cancer shall be known as a thing of the past, says the Lord. Diabetes, Alzheimer's, shall be known as a thing of the past, says the Lord. Watch, their blood is not in vain. And watch my compassion, says the Spirit of God.
Yeah. You know, if suddenly cancer got in Alzheimer's and diabetes, I love the way he says diabetes, all got wiped out, and you knew it was because 11 elderly people in Pittsburgh got slaughtered, wouldn't you feel kind of shitty about your cure? Because remember, this guy's a Christian, and that means, and those weren't Christians that got murdered in Pittsburgh, so that means they went to hell. Not according to me. I don't believe in hell. There's no such thing as hell. There's no heaven either. No pearly gates, no streets paved with jaspers, or what the fuck's a jasper? No gold, no. But this guy just says that the almighty creator of the universe sent 11 people that he allegedly loved to hell so that he could then be empowered, and he already had the power, because he's the almighty, all-powerful, sees-all, knows-all creator of the universe, so that he could be empowered to finally cure cancer. And if you are in some sort of an afterlife, and let's say you're one of the 6 million who died in the Holocaust, wouldn't you be sitting up and going, wait a minute! 6 million here, 11 there, and now we get the cure for cancer? The fuck? That's right, John. Cool, going to cure all diseases. When's that start? Well, he said, you know, after the midterm elections and after the new year. So, you know, if somebody's got cancer before December 31st, you know, you're out of luck. Sorry. The blood of 11 innocent elderly Jews from Pittsburgh doesn't count for you. This is disgusting. This is sickening. How is there anybody that in Omaha, for God's sakes, how is there anybody that walks through the door of that place
to listen to that madness, that evil madness. Yeah, I know, John says, hey, killing a few people to get better health. What's wrong with that? Yeah, it's the igamfu approach to, it's the right-wing igamfu approach to religion, too. I got mine, fuck you. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, God damn it, I didn't know Wilford Brimley had a religious TV hustle going. Learn something new every day. No, Scott, not a healing bong. A bomb.
A bomb!
As I think about it, Scott says, Israel has done pioneering work on the medical benefits of cannabis, so maybe he really did mean bong. Chalk one up for the goddess of irony. Oh, yeah. Many and mickle are the powers of cannabinoids and THC. Well, that's true. Randy in PA points out that for our third Star Trek reference this evening, Dr. McCoy assisted Scotty in some rocket surgery in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. True. And what does God need with a starship? Yeah. Elise says, hell exists. Well, yes. Hell, Norway, but sure. Ron and Ross, speaking of Israel, did you hear that Avigdor Lieberman, Israeli defense minister, resigned because Bibi wasn't bloodthirsty enough? That Gaza ceasefire was just beyond the pale. I did hear that. What? You're not going to send a few more cruise missiles into a few more cradles, Bibi? Well, fuck you, you panty-waist pacifist. I quit. I mean, that really happened. The defense minister of Israel quit the cabinet of Bibi Netanyahu because Bibi wasn't vigorous enough in killing innocent people. Oh, shit. Happened. Yeah. So, I mean, so we're halfway through the program. That here endeth the lesson, as they say in the highfalutin cathedrals and whatnot. We got other stuff to talk about, of considerable substance. Well, that's true. Warrior Witch in the chat room says, because mainstream religion doesn't have enough dick worshiping. Isn't that what most of it... Phallocentric. There, let's use a highfalutin term. Phallocentric. But let's check in with Scott in San Diego. He kind of got short shrift last night, late in the program. Hey, Scott.
That's all right. My, I'm tall, but my shrift has been short for some years now, and inoperative, or something. I don't know. Your Bob-a-thon, your filibuster, has been stupendous.
Well, thank you.
Here on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And as promised, I wanted to tell you the tale of the bus ride home.
Oh, yes, yes, we did. Yes, I've been waiting.
The rantings of the driver, not a passenger on the bus, mind you, but the driver of the bus, fits right in with all the theological craziness that you shared with us today on the...
Yeah, I don't even want to think about hearing that, feeling that surge of diesel acceleration, or maybe it's natural gas out there, or hell.
Yeah, all the buses out here have gas,
yeah.
So to speak.
But feeling that surge of acceleration and hearing the bus driver holler, next stop, Pearly Gates!
Well, no, it wasn't quite that bad. That would have been halfway rational compared to the rantings of the guy as they were. Okay, so I had some errands to run the other day. I guess this was day before yesterday. First of all, walked, I left the apartment, walked down the sidewalk to a driveway, and then I was going to cross the street, and I looked down, and there's a dime, okay? And then later that night, outside the laundry room, I found another dime, and one of my relatives back east says that when you find a dime, it's supposedly a sign from a departed friend or a loved one sending you a message. Now, what I can't figure is, did I get messages from two departed friends, or was that two messages from the same departed friend or a loved one?
Well, you'll have to ask Chappie Klingenschmidt about that, you know, because he's in the spirit discerning business.
Yeah, well, and plus there's the business of finding a phone booth in today's world, much less a phone booth for which it only costs a dime to make a call, you know, local or otherwise. But that's not why I called. Okay, so I run the errands. I went down to the recycling place and gave them all my cans, and they gave me $10.40, which was handy at the end of the month. And then I went to another place, and then I finally went down to Ralph's to pick up a couple of grocery items. So coming back, I'm standing there waiting for the bus, and the bus pulls up. The timing was exquisite. So this God's hand was in this, okay? I got to the bus stop to go home, and the bus was there within 3 minutes. So you know the hand of God was directing me and the bus and the lady at the checkout counter and the whole thing. You know, the whole day was divinely wrought, as it were. So the door opens, and I look at the guy, and I don't want to make fun of anyone's appearance, but it was a black gentleman, okay? And have you ever had occasion to see The Tonight Show since Jimmy Fallon has taken over?
I have from time to time, clips.
He's got a guy in the band with glasses, like horn-rimmed glasses, and just a wild head of hair. Well, this driver, first I thought the bus had been hijacked by this musician. And I figured, no, because he's wearing an official busman's uniform. But this guy's, the guy on The Tonight Show in the band, in comparison, his hair looks perfectly coiffed compared to what this driver had coming out of his head. I mean, it made a chia pet. It was beyond that. It was just and he had kind of a pleasant yet wild glint in his eye. But I got on the bus anyway, because I'm always keen for adventure. So I walked back about 6 feet, sat down in the first vacant seat, and in the front there are side-facing seats. And there was a guy in the seat across from me and a guy in the seat next to him on that side of the bus. I'm on the driver's side of the bus, just down from the driver. So the doors close and the guy pulls off and they resume their conversation. And the driver says, oh, yes, yes, the shape-shifting reptilians have interbred with humanity and they're taking over things. Apparently, he was in a discussion with these two other guys about...
Wait, would those be the teeny tiny dinos that Brian Fisher was talking about?
No. These are... You ever heard of David Icke in Britain?
Yeah.
Who he talks about the shape-shifting reptilians who apparently came here eons ago from some planet.
This has got to be a big market, because you take that and you compare that with Alex Jones and the... monkey jellyfish hybrids that you can buy in the bazaars of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But by the way, I had a tweet a minute ago I got to share with you. The Blue Hen tweeted to me and said, Teeny Tiny Dinos is my new band name.
There you go.
I'm showing up for that gig.
Yeah, Chartbusters all over the place. Do they still have records? Are there singles? Are there 45s?
Well, you know, the really hip, successful bands will offer vinyl pressings.
Yeah, I heard vinyl is coming back. too late for me. I sold my turntable 20 years ago. Let me take a sip of coffee and compose myself. That's great coffee.
Sounds like.
Apparently they were talking about end times prophecy and Satan's work in the world and all this stuff. But he tells the guy that he's talking with, the driver does, you know, oh, yes, with all the authority of a biblical scholar, oh, yes, the shape-shifting reptilians interbred with humans years and years ago, and it was foretold. It was in the book, I forget where in Revelation, but apparently he thought there was some reference to this stuff in Revelation. And the guy on the bus said, well, where are they? What are they up to? And the guy said, well, they're in Hollywood. They control Hollywood. Okay? And he goes on and on. He was talking about they even interbred with all kinds of animals. You know, and he lists a whole bunch of animals that they had interbred with. And the guy listening to the driver, is more incredulous with each passing moment. And he says, do you mean like that half man, half horse thing? And the driver, I swear to you, says,
oh,
yes,
no.
The sitar. That's how the sitar came.
The sitar? Thinking, really?
Yeah, the
Ravi
sitar.
Shankar?
And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. That's a stringed instrument from India. He means something else. Isn't it centaur? Centaur? Isn't that the word for
yes.
the F?
Yes. Well, and then there's you know, the satyrs too as well, but different. Yeah, right. Yeah. But the centaur only had did he only have one eye or something?
That's the satyr. That's the Jewish meal, isn't it? Around.
No, that's the satyr. God damn it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know much. I just picked these things.
No, the
up.
Satyr's the little guy on the terrible old Hercules cartoons who was constantly saying, help me, Herc, help me, Herc.
Oh, Newt. Newt was his
yes,
name.
Yes,
yes. Yes, yes. I always, when I see
and his last name was Gingrich.
Yeah. Newt and Leroy Gingrich at your service, or cervix.
Amateur paleontologist.
Jesus. But anyway, so, and he's going on and talking about how they're into, in Washington, they've infiltrated government and blah, 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 and they run Hollywood, and they inbred with the humans and the shape-shifting reptilians. And
now, hold on, unless they're hillbilly shapeshifter, they interbred.
Okay, what did I say? They
inbred.
Yeah, they interbred. Okay, no.
I mean, are these banjo-playing centaurs?
I don't
know. Oh, okay, Randy reminds me. No, the Cyclops is the one-eyed guy.
But you do realize what with your activities around the acorn earlier, you do know what you get when you cross a turkey with a banjo, don't you?
Oh, no, what?
You can get a turkey that can pluck itself.
Oh, go anyway. Get plucked, Scott.
No, but anyway, so we finally get to my stop after about 10, 15 minutes of listening to this. And I kept, I kept wanting to interject, but I figured, no, why should I say a word? These guys are providing.
No, this is just one of those Animal House. Shut up. He's on a roll.
That's right. This is the time when you observe and listen and take notes and do not speak. So we finally are pulling up to my stop, and I pick up my two tote bags of groceries and things and get up to the front of the bus. And I stand right next to the driver sitting there in his seat, and I lean in real close. And I said, sir, you do realize, don't you, that Trump is a shape-shifting reptilian? And his response to the news was a rather non-committal, thank you, sir, whereupon I got off the bus. But I'm
you probably confirmed to him that you were a shapeshifter.
Oh, I'm sure I did, because as I recall it, Trump's name was never mentioned. The GOP was never referred to. but I have a sense that he attends a house of worship that thinks Trump is truly the bee's knees or the cat's ass.
Well, I need to offer up a clarification, because you've moved into theology and dogma now, and Robert from Australia is pushing back.
Okay, well, that's all right. I'm used to this.
Are we talking about the reptile people or the lizard people? As everyone knows, these are two different groups and in competition with each other.
Well, I don't know from that.
This is the sort of thing of which schisms are made.
the powerhouse terranium of the, what is it, the reptilian people or the lizard people? Or are those my choices?
Yeah, is it the reptile people or the lizard people?
Well, whoever these people are, I think he was talking about the ones that David Icke talked about from another galaxy eons ago, coming to Earth and bumping uglies with what humans or humanoids there were whenever that occurred. And supposedly the Queen of England and all that group are products of our modern day examples of what you get when, you know, these shape-shifting reptilians from another galaxy have interbred, which is why they
well have now hold on. Okay, now we've left the realm of making fun, and now we're talking about serious stuff. I believe it about the English royal house, because have you ever seen their ears?
Well, that's one
and that
of the
horse
things.
And that horse face. I mean, when Elizabeth II is sad, someone walks in and says, "Hello, Your Majesty, or the long face."
Well, you know, on the chessboard, she can move in any direction at will. You do realize that, don't you?
There's clues everywhere, Scott.
I know, but apparently there was video on YouTube a while back that she had a moment when she wasn't focusing. And according to the guy that posted the video, you could see her beginning to shift her shape, as it were. I just think her panty girdle was not adjusted correctly. I think that's what accounted
for that. Well, you know what? I gotta give you kudos, because here at 7:43 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 28th day of November, I am willing to bet this is the only radio program in the entire United States and perhaps the world where the term panty girdle has been used.
Playtex made with Lycra. There you go. But, and the whole thing is, and they're, the thing about the inbreeding.
Did radio ads for those once, did you?
The inbreeding in the royal family, at some point, they were weakening their stock, I guess is how to put it, which is why they started marrying non-royal people, substantial people from substantial families, but non-royals, or non-royals outside of the lineage, which explains Charles and Diana. Wasn't that part of the reasoning behind them hooking up? Was to strengthen the stock, in other words, because you don't want them going all squishy on us from all that intermingling of genetic material. I mean,
right.
David Icke apparently believes this stuff, and he's a subject of that country. Or was. I don't know where he is now.
Well, you have to at least give the impression that you believe this stuff if you're going to get the rubes to buy it.
But anyway, getting back to the driver on the bus, I'm sure that's who he was referring to. Now, what is the distinction with the lizard people, and what are the other ones called?
The reptile people.
Well, what's their story, Morning Glory?
Well, you know, that's something you'd have to ask a reptile person and a lizard person if you really want a straight answer. Although, you know, because we're both old DJs, you've reminded me of something.
Oh, no. Is this a music cue?
It absolutely is. Because I was thinking back to one of the songs on Jackson Browne's Running on Empty, and the wonderful song, the Loadout, that ballad that closes it all. And there's a point where he sings, I promised no more singing, but, well, damn, too bad. Now we got country and western on the bus. Shape-shifting lizard people. We got Richard Pryor on 8-tracks and cassettes in stereo. I'd forgotten about the lizard people reference in that song.
Hmm. So you're right. There are clues everywhere.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
And I thought about, I seriously did contemplate calling in the, MTS, the Metropolitan Transit folks, and saying, do you realize you have a manifest lunatic driving one of your bus routes?
You know, you'd hate to fuck up his bliss, but...
Well, it
would but when, but, seem... but when you're talking that kind of shit, you can't help wondering how far it is from next stop, Pearly Gates.
Well, yeah, that, believe it or not, that thought did cross my mind. But it didn't seem to be impairing his driving. But yet, I think the rule is no unnecessary conversation with the driver, because he's not being paid to make converts and to preach to people. He's being paid to pick up and drop off passengers and drive the bus in a safe manner. And he wasn't like crossing over the lines or running headlong into traffic oncoming. If anything, he was driving more slowly than I thought was appropriate for the conditions, simply because conversing with a passenger about such weighty things does detract from your driving, I would think. It's like trying to operate a cell phone or texting while driving. Studies have shown that you make typos on the text and you run into shit in terms of your driving. Isn't that pretty much the case?
Yeah, I think you got it.
So as it turned out, this being the holiday season, I don't want to fuck up anybody's livelihood because I know how that works. But on the other hand, I did contemplate calling because it was rather disconcerting.
Well, yeah, you say you know how that works, but I mean, did you ever get shit canned for barking about the lizard people while driving a bus in San Diego traffic?
No.
On the 4th of July? In a hailstorm?
The closest I ever came to being fired for something I said was, I guess, in 87, June of 87. I was working overnights at an adult contemporary station in Kansas City, and the first newscast of the day, local newscast, was at 5:30, and the story in the news had to do with Gary Hart and Donna Rice. So the guy threw it back to me, the news guy, and I couldn't see him because he was like two doors down the hallway in another studio. We communicated through an intercom. When the record was about to end, I would let him know he had 30 seconds or whatever. So he finishes up the newscast, and I thanked him. I did a little crosstalk, and I said, well, that was the downfall of poor Gary Hart on that rice diet. And then I hit my jingle and hit my song after he laughed, the news guy. And I, looking back on it, I wonder, I was fired shortly after that, and I wondered since then if maybe the demo that we were trying to reach, somebody took umbrage and called, the office and said, did you hear what he said? The rice diet. So I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you, there's you're the things this community responds to, Scott.
This is why I love this show.
Robert in Australia responds, the royal family are all werewolves. Everyone knows that. Queen Victoria was the first.
It was an episode of Doctor Who. Why, yes. Yes, absolutely. And then, and then okay, David Icke. Here's another fun.
It's Ike, I think.
I-C-K-E?
Yeah, he pronounces it Ike, like I like.
Okay,
Ike.
Okay. Looks like Icky to me, and by the time I'm done reading what Brother Deacon Asa has said, you'll probably agree. You know what else David Icke is known for, Bob? You're going to laugh or cry. He was a spokesman for the UK Green Party. True story.
That is true. Now that you mentioned it, that is absolutely true.
Brother Deacon Asa says, I wonder how silly Jilly Jill feels about that. Well, she probably feels just fine because, well, after all, you know, vaccines.
Yeah. What about that chickenpox outbreak down in, what was it, North Carolina?
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. The anti-vaxxers sure got their way at the expense of kids and the school system. They had to shut down the school, I think, in one of the...
Well, but don't think that anti-vax is strictly a phenomenon limited to weird-ass Christians.
Oh, no.
Brother Deacon Asa sent me a story earlier today. And it comes from Vox. New York's Orthodox Jewish community is battling measles outbreaks because of the anti-vaxxers inside the Orthodox Jewish community.
Oh, yeah. There's a Hollywood starlet or a model or somebody.
Williamsburg and Borough Park, New York City, have 24 people with measles, while there are 75 people in Rockland County for a total of 99 cases of measles because, well, anti-vax. Funny, God does not seem to have intervened.
No, as is so often the case. Your guy that you were playing audio from earlier, I mean,
They were all nuts.
Well, yeah, the first one, the guy that was talking about what the hell was his deal? It's so hard to keep him straight.
Rick Wiles and the coming Ice Age.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it's like there are people who follow this, who hang on to every word of it and support his ministry because they don't give away, you know, radio time or TV time for nothing. You got to pay for that stuff. You know? And there are some crazy fuckers out there.
Real chase them with a butterfly net types. Alex Jones to Rick Wiles to that goober in Omaha, it's apparently a pretty nice living.
Oh, of course.
Now you didn't see the video, so you don't know that the goober in Omaha was wearing a sort of cognac-colored leather sport coat that looked like he was at the front end of a 70s porn movie, but, right?
Did he have one of those little porn mustaches?
No, but he had the porn sideburns.
There you go. There are clues everywhere, Bob.
And everywhere, Scott, everywhere. And as Ron and Raleigh points out, there's gold in them there rubes.
There sure is.
And as Ron points out, we're in the wrong racket.
Well, it's like H.L. Mencken said years and years ago. Yeah, no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. And there's a longer quote, but that's the gist of it. And that must have been in the 20s or 30s when he said that, of the last century, pretty near 100 years ago, coming up on, if it was the early 20s. Can you believe that? It's almost 2020. I have trouble getting my head around that. you know?
Well, yeah, and it's not just that it's almost 2020, Scott.
Yeah.
It's that it's almost 2020, and all of the promises that were made, at least to my generation, are laying in pieces on the floor.
Well, and that's what has troubled me.
We should be on we should have at least been to Mars and back by now.
Well, in fairness, though, we did soft land a quite a sophisticated piece of machinery, and they said the final approach, NASA referred to it as 7 seconds of sheer terror, or 7 minutes of sheer terror, which would be applicable to any sexual congress perpetrated by Trump, except it wouldn't be 7 minutes, I'm sure. You can't unhear it now.
I watched. It was cool as shit.
But
I'm anthropocentric, and I acknowledge it. And I, at least under Wernher von Braun's plan, and yes, all the baggage that comes with him, but the man was a fucking genius, even though he did later turn into a fucking fundy.
Yeah.
The plan that he had was sequential? You know, first you leave the atmosphere, then you orbit the Earth a little bit, then you go and you orbit the moon a little bit, then you land on the moon, and next stop Mars.
Yeah, that pretty much.
But Richard Nixon, who had so thoroughly screwed himself with Vietnam, was convinced by his advisors, people are bored with this whole. I mean, we go there all the time now, Mr. President. You know, what the fuck? Let's just cancel it.
Well, the thing is, it's like growing up in the 60s, so I've got a couple of years on you. So my generation, my Wonder Bread years were the 1960s for all intents and purposes. And I remember and reading up on it since I've been an adult, there was a sense of can do in the country. There was a sense of change and of hope. And of, you know, no task was too big for the U.S. of A. to tackle, you know? And when problems presented themselves, instead of blaming or pointing fingers or denying, as is in vogue today, we set about to actually get it handled. It was like,
well, Scott, not to interrupt, but to interrupt,
yeah,
it wasn't just can do, it was gonna do.
Yeah.
And so you're a little older than me. I was a child throughout the 1960s, and I was being handed the happy horse shit that you hand a child about what the future is going to hold and about where you live and what you are. And, you know, people who don't live in the United States are going, you privileged assholes. And it's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, great things were going to happen. I mean, this was going to be an entirely different world.
Well,
and then
picture phones, microwaves, and
helium-filled pants, damn it.
Flying cars. No, I missed the helium-filled pants.
Well, that's the Reverbo turned me onto them, and I haven't been the same since.
Now, so we could float around instead of catching buses.
Jet-propelled dirigibles, for Christ's sakes.
Holy fuck.
But it's just...
Somebody dropped the ball.
It's intensely frustrating. Because it was all squandered.
Well, here, let me give you the example that I often use to make the distinction between then and now. May 5th, 1961, Alan B. Shepard, the first American into space, made a 15-minute suborbital flight launching the Project Mercury program. May 5th, 1961. Less than 3 weeks later, JFK got up and said, "We will go to the moon in this decade and bring back the people who went." We had not even achieved orbit at that point. To say that we were going to land somebody on the moon by the end of the 60s and bring that person back safe and sound was as crazy as some of the shit that you were playing in those audio segments earlier in the show. That's how crazy that notion was. But we did it. It cost a shitload of money. I can't remember the exact dollar amount. I once figured out the cost of the U.S. space program and the amount of rocks and soil brought back from the moon and worked it out on a per pound basis. And I'll have to find that and send it to you. But it wasn't much of a deal, but that wasn't the point. The point was, let us do something. You know, and there even today people say, well, you're landing things on Mars and there are plenty of problems here on Earth. Well, yeah, I get that. But wasn't it nice the other day to see us actually to do something, to accomplish something? And I wonder if Trump even took notice of the accomplishment.
Oh, fuck no.
Probably not. His head is in not Uranus, his anus. You know, it's, but you're right. You're right. The highways and highways, what's left of them, are littered with promises unkept. And I get that. I acknowledge that. And my,
hell, yeah,
Bob,
but you know what? Mid 50s white guy pisses and moans about unkept promises. All of oppressed America that's listening right now is going, yeah, fuck off, Bob. We know a little bit about unkept promises, but
oh, I know.
Things like rail. Wouldn't it be awesome to have a rail system that was the equal of or superior to the rail systems in Asia and Europe?
Well, my uncle Fred, he married one of my mother's sisters. Fred Hardin was his name, was the head of one of the big railway unions in the 60s. And that was one of his major battles. Trucking was taking over everything. And he was saying, don't you get it? Rail does have a place in our society as it is. But even the transportation of persons was a big deal.
Yeah, well, see, that's the point. We're going backwards, not forwards. There was there's a photo my family has of my grandfather, who was a freaking coal miner. Okay, I mean, coming out of the hole, just filthy, dirty, and all of that. But he is dressed like a Wall Street tycoon. I mean, black suit. You can see his shoes are shined to a high gloss. He's wearing either a bowler or a derby or what's another, not a fedora, but he's wearing a nice hat, and he's standing in front of a locomotive engine in 1920 in this crummy little town that's falling apart before my eyes. And he's getting ready to get on that train. He never had to learn to drive a car. Because he could always get on the train and go somewhere.
Yeah.
And he's standing.
Back when the trains
and
went somewhere.
And he's standing there getting ready to get on the train and go to Charleston. And when he gets to Charleston, he's going to go to a couple of nice department stores. One was called Frankenburgers, the other was called The Diamond. And he'll buy nice things for his family. And then he'll get back on the train. You know, maybe he'll have a. Well, knowing him, four or five pops in one of the saloons down there.
Yeah.
And then he'll come back up here. Well, that little town back then had three banks, two movie houses, a couple of grocery stores, general merchandise store, barber shops, the works. And, you know, I mentioned mono economies last night. That's because there was a booming coal mono economy.
Mm-hmm.
And It's all gone now. It is all gone now. The road, we can barely keep the roads paved because the coal trucks they annually reduce our roads to gravel, mm-hmm. practically. The barber shop will soon be gone. There are still two banks. There used to be two car dealerships. They're both gone. The movie house shut down when I was a kid. And we've got a Dollar General, like every other beaten and bedraggled community in the United States.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Because again, it, you know, once the coal played out, nobody gave a damn. Least of all the coal companies, and the people were just left to fend for themselves. It's like, oddly enough, this segues nicely into something I heard Stephanie Ruhle say earlier today. She was talking about GM and the layoffs, and she said, "Well, GM makes a decision to cancel an automobile, and so they don't need." And so they lay off 14,000 workers, and they made a business decision. And, you know, and you got 14,000 families that are scared to death right now. And whose responsibility? And then she said, whose responsibility is that? And then she answered her own question and said, it's not GM's. And I thought, well, hello, capitalism. And then I remembered, of course, that she was a derivatives trader for Deutsche Bank.
Well, now, I'm not familiar with her, but I must say that there is some truth to what she has said to an extent. And here's what I mean by that. It comes down to a long history of misplaced priorities and power being shifted from its rightful place to its not rightful place. And what I'm referring to is there was a time in this country where, and it was a golden age looking back on it, but there was a time in this country where businesses and capital could not go willy-nilly anywhere they wanted. There were rules. It's like a football game. If you don't have lines on the field and a book of rules and a referee, sooner rather than later, there's going to be chaos on the field, and it will shift from being a football game to being anarchy and madness and chaos. Okay? Well, it's the same thing in the balance between our government and our people and our industry, our capitalists. And if everything is not harmoniously balanced, mischief can be made. And I didn't realize this with one of these GM plant. They didn't say they're shutting them down. They're not allocating attention or resources to these particular plants. Well, that's a lovely euphemism. But one of these plants on the outskirts of Detroit, I forget the name of the town, was only built in the mid-80s, apparently. And somebody on the news was talking about how they had bulldozed homes, churches, businesses, and who knows what else, acres and acres of churches, homes, and businesses to make way for this plant up there on the outskirts of Detroit or up in that area to build this plant in the mid-80s. 85 comes to mind. And here we are not that many years later, and the people there are being put out. The plant is not producing. And I understand that the car business today is not the car business of 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 50 years ago. I understand that. But the time to fix it isn't now. The time to be thinking of fixes has been all along, every step of the way. And there's like, it all comes down to balance and having priorities set in a way. It's that thing that I say a lot, creating a future that works positively and appropriately for everybody concerned. And we used to do that by and large. Now, granted, there were people left by the wayside. There were people who were not part of the goodies, okay? But even back then, we attempted to remedy that. I think about the war on poverty. I think about the Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Bill. These were principal moments of my youth. And I foolishly thought, well, you know, we're humming along nicely and it will keep getting better. And do you know when it stopped becoming better and getting better? Around 1981.
Yeah, the era of, that's when we exchanged, the rise of Ronald Reagan is when we exchanged actual American so-called greatness for just talking about it.
And values and principles and practices, because they're all part of the greatness. But go ahead.
Well, no, that's, and it's interesting that you would mention that, because so there's this guy who's been getting a lot of publicity lately. He's a noted conservative named Max Boot.
So many of them are noted conservatives.
Well, because they work for wingnut welfare outfits.
Yeah.
Because there's always a job for somebody who is willing to be wrong about everything. Look, David Brooks, Thomas Friedman, the latest wingnut welfare, one of the latest wingnut welfare hires at the New York Times, Brett Stevens, on and on and on, and including this Max Boot dude.
Yeah.
Well, to his credit, he wrote this column for the Washington Post the other day in which he said, you know, not too long ago, people on the far left and the far right were crying that the Republican Party had been taken over by the neocons. And I thought they were crazy. But I have to confess, I was and am a neocon, and then offered this sort of pablum-laced definition of what a neocon is. When I think neocon, I think starting wars with innocent people who've never done anything to the United States like we did in Iraq. And the project for a new American century, and saying we need another Pearl Harbor. And I will never forget a passage in an otherwise innocuous and fascinating book just about the senior year of a bunch of cadets at the United States Military Academy. But they were addressed by, who's the guy who stuck his comb in his mouth?
Oh, yeah.
Assistant yeah, Defense Secretary.
I know who you mean.
Paul Wolfowitz. Wolfowitz.
I know the guy.
Yeah.
Slick hair. And, oh God, gives me.
And in June of 2001, he gives this address. He gives the commencement address to the graduating seniors at the United States Military Academy, and he says, you newly commissioned officers of the United States Army, I can't tell you what's coming. I can only tell you to be ready.
Mm.
And almost exactly 3 months to the day later, boom, 9/11. But that's, anyway, Max Boot says, well, it turns out I was wrong. The Republican Party has been taken over by the neocons. Only it's the neo-Confederates. And he goes on in this Washington Post column, for which I'm sure he was paid quite handsomely, to bemoan the fact that the Republican Party has become a cranky and vocal and dangerous and bloodthirsty and murderous manifestation of the worst impulses of the American right, including Nazis, including Klansmen, including white supremacists, including misogynists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But neo-Confederates is what was his focus.
Well, here's my question.
Well, hold on. Hold the question if you can.
Okay, all right.
And so I read it and I thought, well, you know, I felt like I wanted to give him a participation trophy or a cookie or something.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter was, he had finally, in 2018, come to a realization that a shit ton of us already had on, say, January the 20th, 1981. Because maybe we had noticed that Ronald, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, had done a big kickoff speech at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds,
mm-hmm.
scant miles away from where the bodies of the murdered bodies of Schwermer, Cheney, and Goodwin had been buried in an earthen dam. And some of us actually paid attention to the fact that Ronald Reagan made that speech at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds in Mississippi about states' rights, which, mm-hmm. of course, was the rallying cry for every racist from Jefferson Davis and John C. Calhoun all the way to the present day. Well, we can't have the Supreme Court telling us where the coloreds is going to go to school. We got us some states' rights. But Max Boot only figures it out 37 years too late. And it was kind of infuriating, Scott.
Well, I saw the headline, and I didn't read it. I ought to go back and read it now. But at any point in his column, did he acknowledge the connection between the mindset, so-called, of the neocons and what it has morphed into?
No. He was saying that neocons, as we understood neocons, that's not the same thing as the neo-Confederates. The neocons are still great guys.
Oh, okay. So where we are now are the bad new days, and where we need to go to are the good old days, according to his reckoning, that is to say, the age of Reagan. Was that the gist of his potion that he's selling for a dollar a bottle?
Well, I mean, he's advocating vote for Democrats every chance you get until you've killed the Republican Party so that it can be reborn as it was supposed to be.
Well, but that's my question. The way it's supposed to be, is it along the lines of Reagan and Gingrich?
Oh, sure.
And the rest of them?
Sure.
Well, fuck that. We've been down that road. We've played that. That's B-17 on the fucking jukebox on autoplay.
Which raises the next question, and that is, when, you can blame the millionaire for-profit media for this as well, because every so often, I remember after George W. Bush, the Republicans were saying, well, you know, George Bush wasn't really a conservative. We've never really tried conservative principles in government, principles of small, limited government. And you know, I was there. I saw the whole 8 years. And the fuck we didn't do it. Max Boot, I pulled it up. Max Boot writes, many of us have left the GOP in disgust over the rise of Trumpism. The neocons who are now in the ascendancy are the neo-Confederates who have been encouraged to come into the open by President Donald Trump's unabashed appeals to racist and xenophobic prejudices. Well, what in the holy name of fuck it all does Max Boot think was going on at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds?
Yeah.
What the fuck does he think it was when old 666 Ronald Wilson Reagan was blathering on about the welfare queens and their Cadillacs?
Well, this has been my underlying fear, pardon me, listening to the mouth music of the commentators on all sides of in this era of Trump, that somewhere along the line, Trump will prove to be so bad, and his enablers will be proven to be so bad, that people will look fondly back to their version of what they think are the good old days of the 1980s. and the 1980s and the approach that was used for that decade. That simply was not the good old days.
Well, and see, the last paragraph of his piece, let me just share it with you real quick, Scott.
All right, okay.
It is hard to remember that Republican, because he goes through this business of cataloging Steve King and Kay Ivey and Brian Kemp and all about all of which he's right, okay? Credit where credit's due. But then he says, it is hard to remember that Republicans were once the party of Lincoln. Well, that ended in April 15th, 1865.
Yeah.
But in the 1960s, they sold out their birthright to court Southern voters smarting over desegregation. Smarting? Infuriated. In more recent years, leaders such as George W. Bush, John McCain, and Mitt Romney have been trying to appeal to minority and moderate voters. But with his pandering to white grievances, Trump has abetted the rise of the neo-Confederates. Well, look it. So he acknowledged, and he's, you know, he's probably younger than me, Max Boot. And yet he's saying that the big change came in 1960, and yet he himself eagerly jumped on that bandwagon, and he still waxes rhapsodic about Ronald fucking Reagan.
Yeah, well, see, that's my fear, that the downside of Trump's madness, pardon me, will be that some people will be sold on the notion that he did go crazy on us, and we need to go back to those solid gold, stable years of Reagan and H.W. Bush.
Which, yeah, but well, you know, but the thing is, there may be a vacuum between Donald Trump's ears, but his politics don't exist in one. For every nasty thing that Donald Trump says, you can find a valid, verifiable, and provable antecedent for it in the presidency of Ronald Reagan, or George W. Bush, or George H.W. Bush.
Well, yeah, because they're...
Or Nixon.
Yeah, Nixon, too. I mean, The problem is, I wonder if in this new year of 2019 and beyond, whether we will be able to find our way back. Are the breadcrumbs still there? Are you looking for them too, Chirps? She's upset about something. But it's the thing that worries me.
For God's sakes, I mean... It was Richard Nixon who was sitting there to, well, you know, it's the Jews, Henry. Billy Graham, if it was just the Jews are keeping us from being great. So when all that came out in the Watergate investigations and when the tapes came out, did people go, well, you know, I mean, that's just Nixon? Were people not looking at it and understanding that that was a systemic problem?
Well, people who knew Nixon, you've got to understand the climate in 68 that allowed Nixon to beat Humphrey and Wallace. His notions were about law and order, because the fucking country in some ways was coming apart in the minds of many people on the left and on the right. And there was reference to the new Nixon, and Haldeman, for sure, Bob Haldeman, H.R. Bob Haldeman, whose background was in advertising, and I believe John Ehrlichman's was too. They were Nixon's henchmen, the German Wall, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, and they basically packaged Nixon in 68 to appeal to a segment of society, mostly white, some ethnic, many former Democrats. They packaged him to appeal to a frightened segment of society in 68. Now, he won just barely. I say if the campaign had gone on another week, Humphrey probably would have won. And I don't know how much different or in what ways things would have been different going forward. But we sure as hell wouldn't have gotten Watergate. We sure as hell wouldn't have gotten a break-in to Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. We wouldn't have gotten the plumbers. We wouldn't have got all kinds of abuses that arose out of Nixon's misdeeds. But yeah, that's where we were in the 60s. Because a lot of people, looking back on it, didn't really view Nixon as a conservative in the, certainly didn't see him as a conservative in the mold of Barry Goldwater. He was one of those Wall Street, New York type conservatives. I mean, he had true conservative tendencies, but there was enough of a, I don't want to use the word statesman, but there was enough of a good politician left in him that he actually could address things that needed taken care of as they arose. Let's put it that way. I give you the EPA. Nixon was responsible for that. He might have gone a good way in terms of health care. I think he was also looking at a guaranteed minimum income for people. There were a number of things that he would have been on board with, but he got taken over by his dark side, his mentality, his... If you've ever seen Oliver Stone's film, Nixon...
I have, but...
It'll give you a sense of the workings, his inner workings.
But I'm inclined to think that Nixon was evil all the way back to when he was torturing people on, what was it, the House Un-American Activities Committee?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
But hey, let's jump around on a couple of other stories real quick.
Okay. And I didn't mean to take this much time today.
Oh, no. That's okay. I love the dialogue and I love the conversation. I think you know that. I mean, I think that's what this program is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
So they had the big Christmas tree lighting ceremony.
Oh no.
This evening, and Megan sent me an email saying that Ed Krasenstein, who is of, let us say, questionable veracity over on Twitter, said, breaking, the White House press pool is reporting that President Trump's motorcade abruptly left the Christmas tree lighting ceremony in Washington, D.C., leaving the press pool behind and then refusing to provide any details.
Oh.
Is something big happening? Is Trump panicking? I don't know, but I know this much. He was introduced by the Secretary of the Interior this evening, Ryan Shrinky Zinke.
Oh, God. I thought he was gone or on his way out.
Well, he's been cleared in one investigation, but there's plenty more to work on. But this is the part that's going to make you eat dirt and run rabbits, Scott.
Oh, boy.
You got rabbits in San Diego, do you? I'm pretty
sure
you do.
We got squirrels.
I'm reading from the CBS News account. This is a direct quote from that story. Interior Secretary... Oh, get everybody, hockey puck. Jesus, you'll wake the neighbors with this. I'm sort of slow walking my way toward reading the quote because I'm afraid I'm going to start shrieking.
Well, wait a minute. Let me take a sip of diet right real quick here. Because I like it.
Yeah, and by the way, the Wiggling Pig was out of caffeine-free Diet Pepsi, out of caffeine-free Coke Zero, out of Diet Ginger Ale today, and so I wound up with a 12-pack of Diet Root Beer, Diet A&W, and a 12-pack of Diet Right.
Oh. In cans. Yeah, I know. Stick with the Diet Right because it doesn't have aspartame.
That's true.
But anyway, go ahead.
I thought we went through this. I thought we went through this. It may have aspartame. Well, I don't know now.
Diet Right does not. All the other diet beverages do have aspartame.
Okay, so everybody's had a chance to get the hockey puck in and a couple of loops of duct tape around their heads.
Oh, and let the record show, Donald Trump swills Diet Coke like it's going out of style, like they're going to stop making it. And that shit is loaded with aspartame. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just nasty.
I think, wasn't that a Monsanto product originally?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, you know, look it up.
It's probably poison.
And you'll find the name Rumsfeld in there somewhere. But anyway, go ahead.
You ready? Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke introduced Mr. Trump as, quote, oh, this is still difficult, the man who brought Christmas back to America.
Do the fuck what?
Thank you. I feel so much better because I'm not the only one going.
I wish Tracy were here. She'd put it even better than I have.
Motherfucker said what? Yeah.
Yeah.
The man who brought Christmas back to America, because, you know, during those 8 long, miserable years of the Kenyan Muslim usurper presidency, they never had a Christmas tree at the White House. They only stood out in the yard once in a while, whenever it is that Eid comes around, and yelled Aloha Snack Bar a lot at the top of their lungs. There was no Christmas in America from January 20th, 2009 to January 20th, 2017. But Santa Claus was banned from the mall, and we know that he was because he didn't have any little Santa's helpers there in the little elf suits with the cute little green tights for Roy Moore to try to date.
Not a shred of tinsel to be seen.
Not a sausage.
Read it to me again.
Okay, wait a minute. Since this is a CBS News report, let me. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke introduced Mr. Trump as the man who brought Christmas back to America. I know. It feels like an appendectomy done with a razor blade and a fist.
It's like somebody reaching in your outward passage on your posterior and ripping you inside out suddenly.
No, well, you know, it reminds me of that one prostate exam I got one time where I looked over my shoulder at the doc and I said, trim your fucking nails!
Put that fucking hamster away.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry.
God.
It doesn't get any better. Interior Secretary.
In the wake of Zinke's pronouncement, the only thing that would make this more horrifying is if the fucking national Christmas tree, holiday tree, whatever they want to call it, were decorated with the severed heads of refugee babies.
Well, I mean, they didn't have quite enough time this year. Give melanoma a chance. Yeah, she's got the blood red trees. She's got the blood red trees already.
Oh, Jesus.
But I mean, I'm sitting here reading this to my, you know, I tried it in the Walter Cronkite voice. I tried it in just my regular little baritone voice. Let's see. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke introduced Mr. Trump as the man who brought Christmas back to America. No, my bad Bugs Bunny doesn't help any.
Do you do a passable Elmer Fudd?
Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke introduced Mr. Trump as the man who brought Christmas back to America. It ain't helping. It ain't helping.
Not at all. Not at all. Did Trump make remarks?
Mr. Trump offered some remarks about the birth of Jesus and praised first responders and those serving in the military, among other remarks.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, wouldn't you just... Well, you know, when I was born, a lot of people said that I looked a lot like Jesus.
It's beginning to look a lot like... Uh-oh.
You know, I got a lot of packing to do after the program's over here, and you know, we got to get out fairly early tomorrow. And and I don't drink anymore anyway, but Jesus, jumping Christ, Scott. I tell you what, I want to turn something upright. I mean, I don't want to pull the cork out. I want to drive it into the bottom of the goddamn bottle and just bloop, 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 bloop.
You know, I kind of...
The man who brought Christmas back to America, what is this, the fucking Grinch? What, did he come down off of Mount Crumpet? No, he can't be the Grinch, because the Grinch at least had Max the goddamn dog. Trump doesn't like dogs.
Did Zinke ever drive a bus?
rubber mask kind? No, but I think he is one of the reptile people. Which, by the way, I should let you know that Brother Deacon Asa provided me a list of the reptile people.
Well, send that to me.
I can't. There's no way to send this, but I can share it with you.
Okay.
List of shape-shifting reptilian overlords. I swear, Bob, I didn't make this up. The entire British royal family, the Queen Mother, was apparently one of the highest satanic witches in Europe. The Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Merovingians, a medieval French dynasty, the Habsburgs, the most powerful family in Europe under the Holy Roman Empire, various Egyptian pharaohs, okay, basically every royal dynasty ever, politicians, hail to the chief, thanks Obama, Dick Cheney, almost believable, George W. Bush, Bush the Elder, claims he spoke to many people who have seen him change to a reptoid and back again in front of their very eyes, Jeb Bush, Bill and Hillary, Al Gore, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon, Lyndon B. Johnson, John F. Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, Henry Kissinger, Franklin Roosevelt, Ted Heath, Winston Churchill, Tony Blair, Dalton McGuinty, former Premier of Ontario, Mikhail Gorbachev, Stalin, Hitler, okay, basically every world leader ever, Chris Christopherson, Charlotte Cooper, the Nagas, gods of the Indus Valley, mythical creatures or really other mythical creatures. This is some advanced conspiracy, to be fair. Nagas are associated with reptiles, so there's a small amount of basis here. But in this case, not lizards, but, you know, snakes. And that's just some of your...
I didn't hear Ross Perot's name.
Well, you know, I didn't... and you know who I didn't hear? I didn't hear James Buchanan.
Oh, yeah.
Or A. Lincoln.
Wow.
And if you want a 20th century reptile person, it's got to be Woodrow Wilson. Okay, wait a minute.
James Carville, for Christ's sake.
Well, old Serpent Head, sure.
Yeah.
okay, we've got a suggestion coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Can you try reading the headline in Steve O'Brien's voice, Bob?
Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke introduced Mr. Trump as the man who brought Christmas back to America.
Oh, Jesus, if there's people listening to this while they're driving, they've gone to sleep. Wake up! Wake up! by the way, you get a cowbell for the hamster, I'm told.
Okay.
Let's see, and by the way, oh, and your voices lately are amazing. You went from Mississippi to Michigan or somewhere the other day. Cracked me up. Tracy says, did I hear my name? I am simultaneously listening to the show and watching The Shape of Water, which is about a monster, and I don't mean the amphibian man. I mean the humans that would rather destroy it than let it be free, much like what's happening in this country. This movie is at times as horrifying as Melanoma's blood-red Christmas trees. Tell Scott I said hi. Love you both. Love you, Tracy.
And I saw that movie a couple of weeks ago.
I loved that movie.
Yeah, I watched it again because I said I wasn't sure. I had read reviews of it and stories about it, and then I watched it, and I said, well, I'm going to watch this again, which I did. And it's a hell of a yarn. It's a hell of a yarn.
It's a lovely piece of filmmaking.
It was a little weird in places.
But okay, it's been out long enough. There's not going to be any spoilers because I was watching. No, not the cat. Yeah, not the cat. Dark. Well, wait a minute. That sounded almost cat-like the way you said.
Well, Well, Chirps has calmed down. She's quite the interesting kitty cat around here.
He truly is. The man who brought Christmas back. Did Trump tell him to say that? Is that what it is?
Well, if he is on the skids job wise. Because, like you, I didn't realize he had been.
I was surprised that anybody could understand him saying that with Trump's balls in his mouth.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's got those squirrel-like pouches where you can store 30 nuts, as it were, in each cheek, or maybe 15 in each cheek. That would be 30 nuts is a lot of damn nuts. You get up into walnut territory, and you're talking about packed in. But I was hoping for at least, in the wake of last night's madness in Mississippi, at least we'd get a couple of weeks during the holidays where madness would not prevail. But this is like setting us up for a hellacious December. There's just no respite. I don't suppose there'll be any respite until he's gone, but then you're left with Pence, so that's not much of an improvement, not any improvement. And when they're both gone, see, this is what I was getting at before about finding our way back after Trump. Is it possible that Trump was the line over which we should not cross because there's no way back? I'm sure there's a science fiction illusion, plot-wise, to a line once crossed, you can never go back, and you're into a dystopian, hellish future. I mean,
well, interesting you should ask.
Because his people, having the mindset of rebels, Confederate U.S. rebels, whether he's defeated in 2020 or has to go bye-bye before that, that they're not going to take to it very well. I mean, you just know that. And they're armed. What are there now? In excess of 400 million firearms in private hands today? And a shit ton of ammunition. You know that there's no lovely transition in the offing, no matter how he goes bye-bye.
Well,
and I really wonder if we have crossed a line.
Well, I'm about to answer that question.
All right. Will it calm me down?
No, it's not going to help.
Oh, God. Go ahead.
And stay away from the freeze-dried coffee for the rest of the evening. I'm in the middle of reading a book from 2017 called The Storm Before the Storm, The Beginning of the End of the Roman Republic.
Hmm.
And as the author notes early on, if you can say this about ancient history, everybody knows about the end of the Roman Republic. The civil war between Pompey and Caesar, followed by the collapse of the Second Triumvirate, Mark Antony, Octavian, the rise of the Imperial Caesars. Everybody knows about that. Yeah, everybody. But what most people don't know anything about is how it got to that point. And that is a story that starts happening about 150 BCE. and it encompasses people like Gaius Marius and the brothers Gracchi and Sulla. And what you have is, oh God, I'm talking slowly. People are going to sleep. I'm actually choosing my words. What you have is a breakdown of political norms. There had been a political system that worked pretty well for a couple or 300 years. Curious, that number, huh? And once those norms broke down, even though with a great deal of bloodshed, Sulla tried to restore those norms. I mean, he even stepped down as dictator and went and played with little boys for the rest of his days. He was a sick fuck. And he tried to institute reforms that would return some level of republican stability. And it didn't last worth a damn. And so the system naturally, not unnaturally, the system naturally continued in its devolution. And yes, I know we can't know America is not Rome, and no, Rome is not America. But as the old saying goes, history may not repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. And it's in that element of the breakdown of accepted, agreed upon political norms that you find that creates the situation you can't come back from. And at the risk of triggering you to say what you also so often occasionally, and I'm sorry I make you say it, because you're a sunshiny little optimist, Scott.
Yeah.
But here's what's going to happen. Barring a statement from the Senate of the United States that if the American people ever elect anybody even remotely resembling Donald Trump ever again, they will impeach him before his fucking, the House will impeach him before his hand comes off the Bible, and he will be removed from office before the fucking first inaugural ball is over. We're not coming back from this, Scott. When you shatter the norms, well, you're in Humpty Dumpty land. And the thing,
so my perception was more right than I realized.
And the most terrifying aspect of all of this is Donald Trump is a fucking idiot. I mean, four square, solid brass bound, dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass, idiot. Take a moment and imagine what happens to this country if a Donald Trump comes along who isn't an idiot. Yeah. And let me go ahead and suggest to you that the non-idiot Donald Trumps exist within the Republican Party. It's not like it'll be, you know, that, well, that idiot's already been born. No, the Herod solution won't work here. They are adults, and they are already in government.
Yeah.
I think of people like Tom Cotton and Ben Sasse, different kind of Republican.
Who comes across so nice, if he was on...
Across real nice, and I would never trust that fucker with a knife in his hand, okay?
Well, that's where it was going, but go ahead.
But there's an abundance of them.
Yeah,
if one of them ever gets their hands on the levers of power, you're gonna find out just how bad it can be.
And
all the pissing and moaning that we've done for the last 2 years is going to seem like a day at the damn beach.
And here's what will be embroidered on their Chinese-made red bowl caps. You ready?
Keep making America great?
No, we can fix this. No, I'm serious. That'll be their operating slogan. We can fix this.
And so having said that, I'm going to filibuster on you here for just a minute.
All right. Listen,
Because I started thinking about this earlier today, and every now and then, the heavens just open, even when it's cloudy like today, and the beams of golden sunlight come down on my face, and the heavenly hosts, one of those. And it happened today. And it happened when it was early this morning. I was engaging in my filthy little habit, even though Joe and Mika are on their honeymoon.
Are they married?
Yes, they got married last weekend at the National Archives, and none other than Elijah Cummings performed the ceremony.
I didn't know. I would have sent them a crock pot or something.
In the photo of them with the cake, Mika looks happy, and Joe looks like he's looking at something slightly obliquely off to one side.
How long do you give them?
Yeah, I checked with Harris in Reno, and they ain't taking odds.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got me on the edge of my chair.
Well, they had Chris Coons on there to talk about the bill to protect Robert Mueller. And Chris Coons said, well, I'm going to make a unanimous request today in the Senate, and I presume he did. And I searched later in the afternoon. I didn't find anything. I didn't find much about it, anything about it, really. But he was going to make, because he says they've got, he said they had 60 votes, Republicans and Democrats, in support of the bill that would protect Robert Mueller from being fired by Donald Trump.
Well, I thought Mitch wasn't going to allow that to even come up.
Work with me.
All right, go ahead.
It's kind of central to the whole thesis here.
Okay.
And he said, Mitch McConnell has stood up and said that he will object. Now, this is a bill, again, with bipartisan support, including people like precious Lindsey Graham. And
well,
didn't
Lindsey write a version of that very bill, or maybe
if it had gone to a vote, it would have been all in favor, say aye. There would have been 60 votes, all opposed, say no, and the bill would have passed. But Mitch McConnell, even with a super majority of the senators in that body wanting to pass the bill, Mitch McConnell simply said no. And the part where the heavens opened and the sunbeam came down and the hallelujah chorus offered up that sort of ambient noise that they make was when what happened is I have this dialogue that goes on in my head with people who want not unreasonable, irrational, impossible things from the government of the United States of America. And in this instance, Scott, I was thinking about the people, and they're entirely on our side. Goddamn Nancy Pelosi, neoliberal establishment shill, we got to have impeachment, motherfucker. Okay? And there's an object lesson in what happened today unanimous consent request that speaks to that. And so we can posit a situation in which the House of Representatives votes overwhelmingly, perhaps, to impeach Donald Trump. And he stands impeached by the House, which, as we recall, if you want some sort of comparison, that's like an indictment.
Yeah.
And then it has to go over to the Senate of the United States to be tried. And, I've often said, there's no way there's 67 votes. 67 votes are a necessity in order to remove the president from office. And there's no way there's 67 votes to do that. There are not, if you tried it before this Congress ends, there are not 18 votes in the Republican Party that would remove him from office.
Now, point of order. Should the House impeach Trump and then it's thrown over to the Senate for their part, it's the Supreme Court, the head justice.
The chief justice presides.
Yeah. So McConnell wouldn't have a say one way or another.
Bullshit.
Or would he? That was
that's my whole point.
Statement. Okay, go ahead.
So, today you've got 60 senators who want to do a thing in the Senate, and one man says no. And so as I thought about it, and I thought about a bill of impeachment going over to the Senate, I could hear the sparklers saying, well, we got to impeach him. Even though impeachment means absolutely nothing without removal. And then I thought about what happened today. And, well, at least he'd have a trial in the Senate. Says who? Do you not remember Merrick Garland? The Constitution speaks clearly to the requirement of the Senate to give advice and consent. That means hold a damn hearing. Mitch McConnell said no. Fuck the Constitution. No.
Well,
there is nothing in the world that would stop, and this includes the Supreme fucking Court, Mitch McConnell from receiving a bill of impeachment from the House of Representatives, spreading the papers out in front of him, unzipping his fly, taking out his tiny, tiny little needle dick and urinating all over it and saying, there's your trial.
So it's not simply a matter of Mitch being chaos averse. He's up to something else entirely. In terms of this.
Yeah, the thing that he is up to is being Mitch McConnell, King of America.
Well, that won't end well.
It hasn't cost him so far. He had to run for re-election after stymieing every piece of legislation that came from the House of Representatives, or practically every piece of legislation that came from the House of Representatives. The only thing he couldn't stop was the Affordable Care Act. Because he hadn't broken the filibuster rule yet.
Well, even though I lived there for a while in the mid 90s, I don't know the current population of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I'm guessing it's probably about 18 to 20 million. But it's one thing to bamboozle a fair number of voters in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. It's another thing to convince the entirety of the United States of one's rightness or correctness. Is this the storm before the storm? Have they gotten so out of control or so full of themselves that they are accountable to no one? See, because he's working on someone else's behalf. Other than his own. I can assure you that because I know how the man operates from watching him all these years. There is something in it for more than just him to not have a vote to protect Mueller. And so on down the line.
Maybe he wants Mueller to be fired. But the larger point that I'm trying to reach here is to please, look, nothing would please me more than seeing Donald Trump impeached. But Jesus, somewhere along the way, we have to, we've got to push the clutch in, take the stick in hand, and engage our fucking brains.
Well, there are other fish to fry, I think, is my take on it.
Well, no, I mean, like I've said, let a thousand investigations bloom in the House, but With Mitch McConnell sitting there exercising unilateral supreme dictatorial power and not a single goddamn member of his majority willing to challenge him on it, I don't think he would even hold a trial in the Senate. Or maybe if he did, the trial would consist of all in favor of the indictment, shut the fuck up, all opposed, the nays have it. Go home, John Roberts.
Well, here's my question, though. He apparently feels confident enough to think that there are no consequences either in not protecting Mueller or not allowing, or to put it the other way, to put roadblocks in front of a conviction process in the Senate after a House impeachment. He seems to have enough confidence that there will be no consequences. And I'm wondering if he is in error. Because if there will be no consequences, then I'll go ahead and say it. We're all screwed, Bob.
And I'm not saying there's no possibility, but that job starts now. Megan reminds me that I said, let's dare to dream big in 2020. Well, part of that dreaming big is starting right now. And, of course, nobody's going to take my advice. I mean, I think there are some people that listen, but there's not going to be anybody to take my advice on this. You start now and you campaign every minute of every hour of every day against two people, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and John Cornhole in Texas. It would be to speak figuratively, a political decapitation for the ages.
Our side must work hard and work smart, and among other things, lay out our case. But not just lay out our case. We've got to show concrete, tangible evidence. We've got to bring concrete, tangible evidence that we can govern in a way that works for people positively and appropriately in terms of getting back on track.
And the question we have to ask is, and see, it's not, you don't even necessarily have to have a candidate in Kentucky yet. Just, you know, hey, Tom Steyer, you want to run ads about impeachment? Why don't you start running a few bajillion dollars worth of ads on every TV station in Kentucky asking, why does Mitch McConnell hate the Constitution? Why does Mitch McConnell hate America? Because if you hate the Constitution, you pretty much hate America.
Well, there's an idea. But see, this guy, Steyer, let me put it this way. If I had $40 million to blow or to invest, I would blow it or invest it in a more beneficial enterprise.
But you know, he's running this dodge where he's trying to get people to sign his impeachment petition. Groovy. But does Tom Steyer not know what happens when the bill of impeachment leaves the House?
Well,
I mean, I'm convinced now that there are a whole lot of people that think if the House passes a bill of impeachment, the president has to leave.
Could it be that he is doing what so many on the right have done for God, going back to the postal mailings of, is it Richard Viguerie?
Yeah, I think so.
There's
yeah.
a name from the past. Is Steyer simply generating names for a mailing list, an emailing list?
Well, he's got one son of a bitch of an email list now.
Because that would be the only tangible result.
Well, the only reason you run a petition drive is to harvest emails.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's like, unless he is deliberately stupid, he must be up to something else. You know, because he can't possibly not know how the impeachment and conviction in the House and Senate work.
Well, hold the damn phone. Why do you say that? You're assuming facts, not in evidence, Counselor.
I would like to think that someone who has gained the type of fortune that permits him to blow $40 million.
Did he gain it in an industry that required him to know the constitutional niceties of impeachment?
No, I'm not saying that he did. I'm just saying it would be nice. Because it's like there's more thought given to the process of shopping for a new cellular phone than this man has apparently given to a major expenditure of 40 some million dollars. That's what I'm saying. It's like if he doesn't know, then a fool and his money, the fool would be lucky to have had the money in the first place, if that's how unknowledgeable he is. I mean, Jesus. even I know, and God knows I don't have $40 million. Well, here I'm giving people, I'm the eternal optimist. I'm giving them credit, thinking that they actually know something.
And you know what? I thought after the, but it goes to show how you can get wrapped up in the passage of time. I thought after the Clinton impeachment that everybody at least had a modest understanding of how impeachment works. But you know what? That was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know. And they're not teaching government or civics anymore. And there's a story behind that. I mean,
for everybody who was 18 years old or less in 1996, you cannot assume that they necessarily know how impeachment works.
Well, and see, going back to what we were talking about way earlier in the conversation, to wrap it up, none of this has happened by random event or accident. There's a lot of planning that is put to, a lot of groundwork has been laid to get us where we currently are. You know, you talk about strings being pulled to make people behave in a manner that people want to have that behavior play out. But the strings are attached to fingers, and the fingers are on hands, and the hands are on arms, and the arms are on bodies of people. And not to get all Illuminati or whatever on you, but there is a tight-knit group of people on the planet, not a great number of them, who are moneyed beyond imagining.
You take somebody and they wield a vastly disproportionate amount of power compared to the general population of the planet.
Exactly. And these people protect their own interests. And if it means putting a chump like Donald John Trump into the presidency and doing everything necessary to keep him spouting his, tweeting his brains out, what brains he has, spirochete burrowed brains, so be it, because it ultimately serves their purpose, is what I'm saying. And well, you've not made me at all confident. Here I was halfway confident coming into the call, thinking the only thing I had to worry about was a demented fucking bus driver with bad hair talking about shape-shifting reptilians. And maybe that's just a symptom. Jesus. I am sorry I brought it up.
Well, I mean, I'm not gooning on you, but I think it's, if we're going to hoot and holler about impeachment, I think we damn well need to at least be moderately informed about the process and somewhat sober about it.
Well, believe me, if I had a list of 50 things that I wanted to have happen in the next 2 years, you know where impeachment would be? It would be right down there with Mississippi's ranking on the grand 50 item list. It would be like 48 or 49. Impeachment is so far off of my to-do list, so far down.
Well,
my
but you're not tapped into the mood of the so-called activist base of the Democratic Party.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob. I have for them the same message I have for the Trump pansies. They can hoot and holler and do all the bullshit that they want to do and keep it, you know, throw poo in their monkey cages or whatever. And the people on our side who are so misguided and ignorant and blind to see that impeachment is not where we need to be focusing. A pox on both their houses. I mean, and maybe that's just me. It probably is just me. But I'm thinking there are people in this country in the middle who have some sense, who see that we're off the track, who know that we must get things together and make things happen again.
Well,
in this country.
Yeah, but to be fair, let me be clear. I think he's impeachable right here, right now, and I think it would be more than appropriate because we desperately need to be shed of him before he can do any more harm than he has already done.
Yeah, but is he convictable? That's the essence.
Well, and there we go. There's no sense in doing it if you can't get a conviction. Hey, Scott, I am going to roll though. We're over time, but I'm going to make up for the time that I missed at the front end of the program, and I do want to take one more call because someone's been very, very patient.
Okay, Bob. We'll travel safely and give our best to Mike and Molly and Kathy, and I hope everybody eats their fill and has a grand time, and that you everybody going and come and do so safely. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Scott. You take care.
Okay, I'll see you.
Bye now. That's our buddy Scott calling from California, San Diego. And well, I don't think we got an official. We're all screwed. He just referenced it. By the way, the population of Kentucky is about 4.5 million. What you'd do would be add buys in Cincinnati, Lexington, Bowling Green, Paducah. Probably you'd buy in the Charleston, Huntington, West Virginia market because that reaches over into eastern Kentucky. And just bombard Kentucky with anti-Mitch McConnell ads until he is so damned hated that you could run an old yeller dog against him and win come November 2020. Did you say Earl?
Irwin.
Hey, Irwin. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm sure you're short on time. I agree with your strategy about those two senators, though. I think Mitch McConnell has to go. I think he's the cancer problem, I think. I really do. But I know that you were talking about Neshoba County, Mississippi. Sometimes on the weekends I watch C-SPAN and they have these lectures on history.
Yeah.
And one night I was watching it, there was a lecture from a college in Atlanta about the Southern Strategy, and Paul Manafort was involved in that decision start with Reagan starting in Neshoba County.
Oh, I have no doubt.
According to that guy, Lee Atwater was working under Paul Manafort. Of course, he rose above Paul Manafort, you know, as a strategist and everything. But I assume this guy knows what he is talking about. But I think Paul Manafort goes way back there. So he's been doing dirty tricks for a long time. But you were mentioning Ryan Zinke. I probably haven't mentioned before, but he's a native son of this Montana.
And he's crookeder than a dog's hind leg, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. His claim to fame was he's a Navy SEAL, and I don't know where he served.
Makes you wonder what the standards are for becoming a Navy SEAL, doesn't it? It's kind of like Mike Pompeo being first in his class at West Point.
Yes, that's exactly what I think too. So I have a good friend whose son was in Navy SEAL, and he's a very honorable person. But this Zinke guy, in some ways, I'm glad he got involved with Trump because I think he's so tarnished now that he'll probably be out of politics now. At least that's what I hope. So maybe we'll be shed of him from this state at least. He can't come back here. So at least that's my hopes. I had some things to say about Ireland, but I don't have time. I'll do it some other time. So on some other church night or something. So, but that's about all I wanted to say, Bob. So.
All right. Well, I'm glad. I appreciate you waiting so long. I really do, Irwin. I do indeed, and I thank you very kindly. And well, heck, we'll talk after I get back.
Yeah, you bet. Have a good trip and say hello to everybody. So
we'll do, Irwin. Have a good evening. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
It's our buddy Irwin out in Montana, and Thus, we find ourselves at the close of the program, a whole three-hour program, even though I was 15 minutes late getting started, I'm 15 minutes late getting finished. So the next live program will be Monday evening. Monday evening, the 3rd of December. And we'll get back busy keeping the horn on the air. Remember, for those of you who like to participate in challenges out on the front end, the first of the month always brings Shirley's Memorial Challenge. So that'll be Monday. Because I get emails saying, you know, I listen after the live program, so I'd like to participate in the challenges. Well, here's a chance to participate on the front end with Shirley's Challenge on the first of the month. Thanks to all of you who've done so much to make everything possible this month and who do so much every month to make this program possible. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our pinch-hit midweek chat, utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I'm really looking forward to meeting you and Miss Karen this weekend. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.